Life was a wheel, and its only job was to turn, and it always came back to where it started. Stephen King, Dr. Sleep.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, Kayla, what's up?
Not much. I am really interested to talk a little bit about psychic vampires. Have you watched What We Do in the Shadows, the TV show?
Yes, I believe I tried to sell the show to you like a year ago, and and it didn't take at the time. You have been watching it now because it is just one of the best damn shows
out
there.
Agreed. Yes, we finally picked it up. Love it. It's amazing. Caught up. But every time I kept thinking about the True Knot and these psychic vampires, and they're supposed to be kind of cool, I thought about Colin Robinson the whole time.
Colin Robinson.
Just like this super square, boring guy. And that's what I thought of.
Yeah, not sure the book would have been quite as exciting with Colin Robinson as a antagonist, but who knows? Maybe.
Yeah, we'll put a top hat on him and see how it goes.
I think like Stephen King has had a few Colin Robinson characters over the years. one could argue that all of Insomnia was a Colin Robinson book.
I certainly felt like I was being preyed upon by a psychic vampire while reading the book, so I could see that energy coming through for sure.
Yeah. But I think we really need a Stephen King book starring Laszlo and Nadia.
Yeah, I would read that big time. Amazing. Oh my gosh. I love that show so much. Anyway, if you haven't figured out, we're talking about Dr. Sleep, in which the antagonists are psychic vampires, which is an interesting new take on the vampire for Stephen King.
Right. Yeah, it is. It was not the route that I expected this book to take, but I'm interested to see. I think based on our Goodreads ratings, we ultimately had different feelings about this book, so I'm interested to see if those have persisted after
no, I had
weeks.
Not. How about
but,
you?
Yeah, so had you read this? Had you read Dr. Sleep before? No.
I wanted to wait until I read the movie when it came out. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Yeah. No, yeah, I was the same. It was a combination of... I wanted to wait until we hit it in the Year of King and see what the book was all about. And then also the reviews that I did read of it were pretty middling. So I didn't feel like I was really missing out on anything by not watching it right away.
This is the best, deepest, most psychological horror film I've seen in so long, which is quite a big deal for, I don't know, a pretty solid couple of years of psychological horror and thrillers. And I haven't seen it yet, but I really like Mike Flanagan, who directed the movie and adapted the story, I think. So I think this book, you know, if anything, it made me really interested to see how he interprets this book.
Right. Yes.
So yeah, I'll have to check it out after this.
Yeah, I'm the same, and I'm also interested to see, you know, this is my understanding, at least, is that the movie version has Stephen King's blessing, but also tries to kind of incorporate some of the Kubrick elements that weren't faithful to King's version of The Shining. So I am kind of interested to see how that balancing act works in the film version.
King, of course, takes yet another opportunity to really lay the smack down on Kubrick's version of The Shining because he takes every chance he gets to spout off about it. So as soon as he started into it, I was like, oh, Stephen, we know. You don't have to talk about it anymore. But yeah, couldn't resist.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah. Well, I guess sure. Before we dive too much further, do you want to do your typical...
We meet back up with Danny Torrance, who was a young lad when The Shining took place. He was the son of Jack Torrance. And famously, he was the little boy with the Shining, very strong psychic powers. So we catch up with him a couple decades later, and he is a janitor at a hospice. And he's been struggling with alcoholism and trauma from the Overlook Hotel for years and years. And his alcoholism has kind of dulled his shine a little bit. And so now he mostly uses it to help guide people who are close to death to have a really peaceful death. So that's why they call him Dr. Sleep. So he's got that going on in his life. And then we also meet a character called Abra Stone, and she is a kid. She's a young kid. And she is a powerful, I just wrote shiner. That's the best word I could think of. She's a powerful shiner. And a group of psychic vampires called the True Knot learn about her existence, and they are after her for her energy that they want to get from her, and they call it steam. And so Abra psychically feels Danny's energy, and she reaches out to Dan for help. So they kind of team up to take on this True Knot, and it eventually leads them back to the site of where the Overlook burned down. It involves a lot of ghosts and astral projection and steam release. And it actually ends up like a pretty happy story. They defeat the True Knot. Jack Torrance as a ghost waves goodbye to Danny. It's a very strangely emotional ending to this book. But
for sure. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I guess the big question that certainly when this book came out was posed, and still I think whenever you're for anyone who's going
yes,
to read it,
I think the big question the is: question
does The Shining really need a sequel
throughout this book? Luckily, I think this book is really well written. So even throughout, I was like, I don't think this really needs to happen. I don't really need to hear this story. At least it wasn't badly written. So I will give the book that.
I pretty much have the exact same feelings in that, no, The Shining does not need a sequel. It can stand on its own and, you know... of all the King works, that's one of the ones that kind of least demands a sequel or whatnot. And I'm with you on the flip side. This is a well-written book that I think is a pretty fun, fast-paced read that holds your interest. And, I was certainly not disappointed at the end, but at the same time, I'm like, am I lining up for The Shining 3
would be called? There were a lot of things that I quite liked about this
book. But if it
happens,
I'll give it a go.
Like we said before, it's well written. And the scenes in which Danny, I keep calling him Danny. He goes by Dan in the new book because he's a grown up and, you know, they don't get called Danny anymore, I guess. When he's talking about the trauma from the experience of the Overlook and from dealing with his alcoholism, the whole scene where he has that one night stand with this girl and they're drinking and doing coke and all of the stuff. And he wakes up in the morning and he's greeted by her son, who's maybe just, you know, 18, 20 months old, kind of greets him as he wakes up and he realizes that she's left her son at home the whole night while they were together. And he steals her money and leaves the kid. It just breaks your heart. It's so emotional and so deeply felt, I think, by King, who is a recovering alcoholic and somebody who's been working on that for a long time. And then those scenes to me were so powerful and so good.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, no, yeah, that's a, it's a, it is a solid rock bottom scene, and then I think the even more fascinating part about it is kind of towards the end when he finally has the courage to tell that story at the AA meeting, and everyone's just kind of like, we all did something that bad, you know. So it's like, even though it's so personally horrible for him, like in that
community,
everyone just kind of shrugs and goes, okay, next.
It was fascinating. And King, we've talked about this a couple times, that I think he handles the things that he's personally dealt with. He writes about them a lot in his books, of course, and I think he always handles that stuff really, really well.
So what did you think of just the general concept of the true knot and these goofy ass
smoke sucking vampires? Is the main antagonist. She's like the leader
steam
of the
sucking sorry
I think she's kind of cool. She's got a little swagger, but the rest of them are so stupid and just, it's just so dumb. I almost wish that they were, that it was just her who was like the big baddie going after Dan. We'll talk about Abra in a minute, but I almost wish it just kind of came down like head to head between like Rose the Hat and Dan. So how did you feel about them?
Right. You know, they're not great antagonists. By the end, though, at the end, I was almost just like, this is so goofy that I'm just gonna roll with it and enjoy it, and so I'm okay with it. You know, there's a, like, ultimately, you know, like, I didn't really know why we needed the storyline where they were like being wiped out by this measles virus or whatnot. You know, like, because I felt like combined, Abra and Dan were so strong psychically anyway, that even if the true knot had not been sick and getting, you know, part of this, measles like pandemic within their group, you know, even if they didn't have that going on, I felt like it was, you know, at best an even fight.
True.
And probably still tilted towards the ones with the shining. So that was kind of strange. I didn't know why the group needed to be weakened before they even met, you know, the good guys in the book. But yeah, I mean, the whole thing is just goofy. And, you know, it's every time there's any type of vampire storyline, and this is one of the reasons that I don't love vampire things, because I think they all kind of repeat themselves. But anytime there's a vampire storyline, you know, it's this ancient group with infinite resources, and they've been around, you know, they've been around for ages. And as a callback, what We Do in the Shadows kind of skewers that, all of those tropes hilariously. But, you know, in this one, it's just like, oh, it's this ancient group, and now they ride around in RVs, and, you know, but they have all of this money, and they can basically, like, close off an entire hotel or campground, and I don't know. To me, it's just like, it's just a very stale vampire storyline. But, you know, but there is this really goofy aspect where they're basically doing shining very, poppers or something
to
get their highs.
It's kind of harmless, and the ending has no suspense to it at all. Like, you know who's going to win in this battle very obviously. And when it comes to, like, you know, King does a good job, like you mentioned before, with pacing. So it's not a slow book or anything, but you're just like, okay, let's go. I can get on with it. We already know what's going to happen.
Right. Yeah. For me, honestly, the only kind of suspense with the ending or whatnot was, like, obviously, you know, obviously Abra was going to be fine and whatnot. The only thing that I wondered any was, you know, at some points I was like, oh, will he actually kill Danny? And Mm-hmm. You know, and then, you know, that's kind of his final redeeming act or whatever, which, yeah. You know, does not happen in the end, but that was the only thing that I wondered whether that would happen.
They were
yeah,
not
it was
ready
clear
at all
that in the end, the true knot was not
this battle. They're so ridiculous. Speaking of Abra, I have previously made a lot of statements on this podcast and in various conversations that I do not like child sidekicks in stories, really at all, ever, as a general rule. And Abra also goes along with that rule. I do not care about Abra really at all. She shows up and she's so perfect and boring, and she doesn't really do much interesting at all. I just didn't care for her. I would so much prefer, and I feel like King does this a lot, where he feels like he has to set his protagonist up with a kid in order to make that person more sensitive. And I think we've got that with Danny. Like, we see him go through all this stuff. We don't need someone for
right,
him to, like,
yeah.
worry about, or for someone to make us care about him more. He's already really vulnerable. We don't need a little kid for him to have to fuss over. What did you think about Abra? I have a
yeah,
compulsion.
Yeah, I didn't have the same kind of visceral dislike that you do, but yeah, I agree. And you know, then at towards the end, when it's revealed that she is, you know, I guess technically his niece or, you know, half niece or something, that was kind of like kitschy. And it's like, oh, okay, like I guess I see what you did there. But I mean, to be honest, this didn't necessarily need the Abra character or, you know, a child character. But I actually did really like the writing mm-hmm. that he does when he's like describing the psychic link between them, and you know, kind of like the wheel that they spin on and all of that stuff, and you know how the mental or psychic aspects of the Shining work between them. I actually don't. It's you know, like we said, the whole book is just a little bit goofy, and those parts are too. But I actually enjoyed them, and I thought it was like some much better writing about like various, you know, he's had yeah. books in the past where characters, you know, like get trapped in their mm-hmm. own mind or something. And, you know, like Dreamcatcher yes. comes to mind. And in that book,
yeah,
it was,
you know, he
really
keeps trying
dumb.
A couple of different
and
things.
In this book, I kind of enjoyed
it. At
the
same time, he'll kind of pull up different actions or different events, and he just keeps getting better at writing overall. So it was kind of nice to see him give it a try and then actually do really well at it to make it seem interesting and engaging.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I'm sorry, not to solely crap on Dreamcatcher,
yes.
because another
I
time that he did
that.
It that was actually even worse was in Song of Susanna.
So terrible. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely.
So compared to those, this one was a major success. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah,
the Abra character,
and King always has
not
to
a lot of depth,
add something else
to
it, like the fact that they're secret niece and nephew, or uncle and niece. He always has to add something like that where you're like, okay, sure, we get it. He
right.
does that.
Yeah.
Oh, he does it all the time, and I think he's like very sentimental writer, which I don't know if he would always cop to that. But I feel like he's very sweet like that. Sometimes he enjoys making those connections, but yeah, a little bit silly.
Yeah, for sure.
He also tries something else too.
What else do you have?
Dan goes to visit Abra's great grandmother, I believe, and where he finds out this information that he and Abra's mom are actually related. And the woman Conchetta is dying of cancer, and Dan actually like sucks the cancer steam out of her. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yep.
Oh, and then right. He spits
it back out.
He inhales her pancreatic cancer. Rose the and, Hat,
which John Coffey did in The Green Mile. So I saw that happen. I was like, oh, I see what you're doing. You're doing it again. You're trying it again. And I thought that it worked well in Green Mile anyway. But this, he does it again in this one. It's kind of a fun connection.
That's a nice, I didn't make that connection immediately when I was reading it, but then afterwards, thinking about it some more, I did piece two and two together. But medical advice,
that
don't
is
inhale
a good
anyone
tip
else's
from
pancreatic
a real
cancer.
Doctor, so
you probably won't spit it
I appreciate
back out.
That. Cause you never know when you might come across an opportunity and you can't do it. It's tempting, but yeah.
Right. Although, you know, maybe you can get some to believe that that's the cure for COVID. So, you know, pluses and minuses.
Oh, what did you think about Dan's ability to do the whole Dr. Sleep thing and help hospice patients kind of pass on peacefully? And of course, he's got the little therapy cat, Azzy, who goes and comforts these people before they pass away. Did you like that?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it. You know, it kind of seems like a natural extension of his gifts from The Shining. So it kind of made sense to me. It actually, to be honest, it wasn't really wasn't emphasized as much as I kind of expected at the beginning of the book. You know, given that the book is titled Dr. Sleep, and you know that's where the name comes from. There's not a lot of you know, real attention given to that aspect of his abilities. Probably, you know, really only the, I guess there's the time when he's helping the elderly woman die. And, after she dies, the spirit of Dick or whatever, inhabits her for a few minutes, to communicate with him. So I guess that's kind of the main use for it. And then, you know, then he uses it apparently a little bit with Conchetta. But yeah, you know, it's kind of strange because it's what the book is named after.
I think it makes for a
really
good title. So they probably were like, yeah, Dr. Sleep sounds really cool. Tests well with the audiences. But it makes for a good title.
Yeah. I did enjoy, you know, I think there were some callbacks or some closure on some things from The Shining that were, you know, nice to revisit, you know, like we learn what happened to Dick and then we revisit some of the, creepier, you know, spirits or visions or whatever that haunted the Overlook. Those pop up from time to time here. So
yeah, and those so this was, book isn't particularly
I don't know, that was,
scary
was fun,
at all,
if nothing
or
else.
Even creepy. The only time I thought it was particularly creepy was in Danny has, I guess, like a vision of the ghost of the lady in the bathroom, trying to come back and attack him, and I thought that was pretty creepy. We do get the evil ghost. I can't remember what his name is. He's the owner of the Overlook. So he comes back. Jack comes back. So there's definitely a lot of callbacks for people who are big fans of The Shining, which is fun.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, they're more just kind of curiosities rather than anything that really drives the plot forward. Except I guess, you know, the one does come in handy the invisible member of the Knot is hiding in the shed, and you know, and the hotel owner ghost takes care of her then, but that storyline seemed kind of creepy, or sorry, not creepy, silly, and you know, with her hiding in the shed. And, you know, again, I was like, you know, is the purpose of this, is she going to somehow, you know, kill or seriously injure Danny before you know, Abra wins the final battle? But in the end, no, she was just there to get killed by a ghost.
Anything else that you want to mention before we go to crowns?
Yeah, I think I'm good for crowns. I think, I think I've conveyed.
Same. I gave it. I enjoyed three this crowns. Book, but I couldn't decide between two or three, but I just think the writing is really good in a lot of places, and it really bumps it up to three for me. Definitely a not needed sequel. A lot of the moments with Dan were really lovely and really impressive, I think, for King to work on. But yeah, the rest of it I thought was a little bit too silly. Like, it kind of took the tone down weirdly from dealing with Danny's issues to having psychic vampires running around and trying to attack a kid. I don't know. Just kind of a weird tonal thing for me. But yeah, three.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Yeah, okay. Yeah, I'm going 3.5. You know, like you said, and like we had already discussed, not a necessary sequel. And there's a lot of stuff in this book that's really weird and goofy. And but on the flip side, it's really well written. It constantly kept me wanting to see what was going to happen next, and so I sped through it pretty quickly. And you know, in the end, it was fun to revisit these characters and spend some time with them and have some of the new characters introduced, even if the overall, you know, if the overall storyline was a little bit silly.
Yeah, we've had a lot worse.
You know, that's okay. It's silly. You know, silly's better than boring.
I'll take it. He's been on a pretty decent streak the last couple of books, and kind of pumped out some pretty interesting, fun books that I think we've overall pretty much enjoyed. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, except for a brief detour back to the Dark Tower universe. I completely agree with you. I think this, you know, from around, and I would have to look at the exact years, but I feel like from around 2004 or 5-ish on.
He's been very prolific.
Been a lot of good stuff coming out of Maine.
We are only reading the novels right now for the challenge, but in between these like couple of years, he's put out like collaborative novels, like books of short stories, a play, like all of this stuff all at the same time. So he's been super productive, even for Stephen King, which says quite a lot because he's always really productive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So looking forward to visiting those on the back end. And then, in the meantime, he's, involved
he's
in Twitter
busy.
Controversies with J.K. Rowling and, quite the political tweeter. And things are, and making oodles of money off of his successful movies.
Absolutely. So never boring with him.
Things are interesting in King world right now. All right. Well, I believe next time we go back to
the...
Yeah,
we're in Joyland, and we're in North Carolina.
The hard case crime series,
randomly.
Is that right?
So, big change of scenery for us.
Right. Yes. Yeah, Stephen King at last writes his
I know, it feels like Scooby-Doo, but, we'll get to it. Yep, talk to you soon.
Hey,
bye.
Absolutely. All right, well, thanks.
For more of our Stephen King adventures, please follow us on Instagram at The Year of King.